Hello, and welcome to Taking Liberties, the podcast of the Harvard Civil Rights Civil Liberties Law Review. My name is Maisie Teitler, and I'm your host. Today, I'll be speaking with two Harvard Law students, Hannah Pearls and Aaron Regenberg, about their involvement in a new protest group on the law school campus. Hannah is a third-year law student whose studies focus on climate change-related migration and displacement, who humbly self-describes as a novice activist. Aaron is a first-year law student who came to Harvard after a decade of electoral and community organizing, as well as serving two terms in the Rhode Island General Assembly. So I'm here to speak with Hannah and Aaron about a protest that occurred this January at a recruiting event sponsored by the law firm Paul Weiss. Would one of you like to provide an overview of that action for listeners?
Sure. So back in January, a group of several dozen Harvard Law School students, primarily 1Ls, though, across the years, took action to disrupt the recruitment reception of the law firm Paul Weiss. And we showed up and did our best to deliver a message loud and clear to the partners at that firm that we will not work for them as long as they are working for ExxonMobil. Paul Weiss has been defending Exxon in over a dozen cases related to that corporation's role, not just in creating the climate crisis, but also in knowingly and deceptively funding a campaign of misinformation despite recent investigations that have shown that Exxon knew everything there was to know about climate change 30, 35 years ago. So we took that first action in January, and since then, the campaign has really spread to a bunch of law schools across the country, and we're really excited about its potential to hopefully get a really important conversation started within our chosen profession.
Fantastic. Yeah, I'm also a first year at the law school, and I've definitely noticed a lot of first years talking about and kind of picking up the dynamics of that protest and really following it very closely. So I was wondering if we could, I guess, take it back a step so people can learn about sort of the background from where you approach the idea for this protest and action and moving forward where you see it going. So can you talk me through where the idea for the action came from, what message you guys were looking to send, and what specifically was the inspiration for doing this work?
Well, I think taking the biggest step back, I know for myself and a lot of the other students who've been involved in organizing this, there was a bit of a sort of culture shock upon coming to law school, you know, for folks who came here with the idea that, you know, the law can be used as a tool to promote the public good, to help people, and coming onto this campus where in so many ways the reality is, you know, we have an education that's a pipeline and a funnel into corporate interest law. We have a culture that resolutely refuses to admit any real world or moral implications to the work we do, despite all the evidence to the contrary that that the way the legal industry works does have very real world consequences as far as buttressing wealth and power and keeping those without it from attaining it. And I think there's not much of a better embodiment of those problems than you know, when January starts up and the corporate law firm recruiting events begin, and it's really stark the way that just career services at Harvard and so many of these top schools favor corporate interest law, make that the path of least resistance for students who come here. You know, there's a lot of research that's been done saying most students enter law school with an interest in going into, you know, things that help the public. And by the end, based on the financial burden that folks here choose to create based on the corporate culture, the curriculum, all of these different things, you know, the vast, vast majority go into corporate interest law. So I think that was a impetus for folks to be like, we need to be at least starting a conversation on this. And then I think it really came into focus with, you know, we have a generation that is particularly acutely aware of the climate crisis. We know that we're at a do-or-die moment in human history. We're really standing on a knife's edge. And in order to maintain a livable future, we know we need to start reining in corporate polluters. We know mm-hmm. we need to stop them from blocking climate action, from weaseling their way out of accountability for the harm they've caused. And, you know, just being here, learning more and more about how important the legal industry is in the apparatus that shields corporate polluters mm-hmm. from accountability, and seeing a firm like Paul Weiss that is not just defending Exxon in ways that are so unethical as to cause multiple state attorney generals to say that it's absurd and, you know, blatantly obstructionist, but they're actually aggressively filing these retaliatory lawsuits. Mm-hmm. They're trying to intimidate and coerce and harass any victims, any community members, and their lawyers who step up to say, wait, we are hurtling towards a crisis. So anyway, I think the thinking went, and then I'm going to stop talking because I've been talking for a while, but we're in this moment right now for these next 3 years while we're at law school, while we're at this elite school, where there's some leverage there. Mm-hmm. We've seen law students have been able to make a difference. They've been able to use that power that they have, where we're the folks that these firms depend on to stay mm-hmm. on top. And so let's utilize that leverage best we can.
So for listeners, I think what Aaron's referring to with the success is that Harvard law students, in coalition with a lot of other law students across the country, have been able to successfully press for some reforms in the hiring at big law and in policies, specifically phasing out the use of forced arbitration contracts most recently in hiring at law firms, which has been very, very successful. Is that what you're referring to with the successes?
Yeah. I mean, People Parity Project's success on forced mandatory arbitration, you know, a few students taking the biggest firms in the world and forcing them to change their behavior. And I think we can look even further back. You know, there were organizing campaigns in the 80s and 90s around the law firms representing, for example, South African apartheid mm-hmm. Businesses that were really successful in sort of revoking the social license of the legal industry to represent these rogue actors. And, mm-hmm. and the top firms, in many cases, stopped, said, we're not going to do that. I think a similar thing happened with big tobacco. Mm. And, you know, if there's any rogue industry right now, it's the fossil fuel industry that's literally putting us on a path that is incompatible with human civilization.
Right. So did you guys see your audience more as, I suppose, fellow law students and kind of trying to call people to remember why they came to law school during the sort of tumultuous and pressure from sort of the university time of firm receptions? Or were you really trying to put pressure on the partners or both? What, I guess, did you have a primary audience you were thinking of? Or
I can speak to what drew me to the campaign, because I think mm-hmm. it is a bit of both, but in very specific ways that mm-hmm. I think are important to call out. First, I think we are calling on students in a way that we seek to disrupt a culture of complacency. I think as a 3L, the phrase I hear most often when I say, well, I'm going into public interest work, oh, that's so great for you, I'm going to sell my soul for a few years. Mm-hmm. Like, that is the phrase that people use. And I think for many people, we want to acknowledge and honor that that is a choice people make because of the incredible financial burden that they have, because of circumstances that make it so that that is the only choice. And that is a fine choice. We are not here to shame students. We are here to shame firms that pursue the types of tactics that Aaron just described. So I think, first, we want to honor students who make these choices for very legitimate and important and personal reasons. And there are plenty of students who take this route because it's the easy route mm-hmm. and because we're not questioning the impact that our making this choice to go and work at this firm and do their work has on the world outside of our own lived experiences. And so exactly what Aaron said, we are facilitating the destruction of the planet by providing legal immunity to fraudulent acts. Like right. That is what we are doing when we work for these firms. And we need to step up and recognize that we have an incredible amount of power as Harvard law students. And I think that's what called me to this action was, I know that I have power now as a 3L, and that power is going to go away mm-hmm. when I graduate. And I want to use that power to target firms who are doing these things and assuming that we're just going to flock to them. And that's not the case, and that shouldn't right. be the case. So simultaneously, can we help students realize they're not alone, that they do have some power and flexibility to question where they go and how they spend their labor, assuming and recognizing the wide range of privilege that exists at our school. So I want to hold all of that. But telling the firms, you know, we're watching and we're not just going to sit down and take it anymore.
Right.
And I just follow up to say that, you know, it's not a pipe dream that we can make a difference here. Can't know this for certain, but just last week there was an op-ed in, you know, a prominent legal outlet about why we're wrong, written by someone who happens to run a crisis communications firm.
He's a reputation consultant.
So I can't know for sure that Paul Weiss hired a crisis communications firm to help them, but I don't know any other sort of reasonable inference to draw from that. You know, we force them to make statements. We know that associates are talking about this, that we're living, you know, rent free in the heads of the folks at the highest levels of the firm. So there's a whole lot of work, obviously, to move, you know, some of the most powerful elite corporations in the country or in the world. But it does seem like, in addition to fostering conversation on multiple campuses, we are in some way having an impact on the actual target, and our hope is that we can, you know, continue pushing and continue growing this campaign to have a real world material impact. Because I guess the one other thing I'd say is it is clear that there is a material impact between these top firms representing clients and not. You know, I mentioned big tobacco, but you can very clearly see there's a clear intersection between the time when the tier one firms started backing away from big tobacco clients and saying, oh, this isn't prestigious anymore, we're getting a lot of flack, we're not going to do this anymore, and the time when the folks, you know, public interest folks started actually winning cases against big tobacco, which they'd been losing for years and years and years and years. So, you know, in the climate movement right now, we haven't had a whole lot of success. We have been losing a lot. Folks are figuring out the right legal strategies. We're going to get there, and we're going to get there faster if the most elite winningest firms say it's not, we don't need to continue putting all of that talent and resources on the line to shield these rogue actors.
Right. Okay. So I'm hearing you, yeah, talking about the goals and saying certain responses you've seen from unknown actors, unknown motivations. In a broader sense, has there been any exciting or disappointing follow-up you've had either here on the law school campus or sort of more broadly in the media that you've seen that's either really galvanized you and made you feel like, yes, we can actually get traction here and organize with other students, or on the other hand, has been like disappointing, you know, feeling like you're running up against a brick wall, like the successes and the challenges, I guess.
I think we saw some really amazing successes pretty soon after first Harvard and then Yale, and then it moved to other schools. One of which is that Georgetown agreed to divest from fossil fuels, phasing out over the next 15 years, or I forget the time frame, but that was a huge statement. I think Cornell is pursuing potentially a similar strategy. We saw the faculty of the School of Arts and Sciences submit a letter saying that they would push for Harvard University to also divest from fossil fuels. I think something else that we just want to highlight is that the Prison Divestment Campaign just filed a lawsuit following on the strategies of the Climate Divest lawsuit that happened a few years ago. And so it is part of this broader conversation that I think is really exciting. You see people publicly recognize this has to happen. We need to move away from protecting fossil fuel interests. And I think there are some more things that we can do.
Yeah, I think one of the things that was most exciting to me was just seeing how folks at other schools saw this and were inspired to take it and run with it. As Hannah mentioned, a couple weeks after our action, an amazing group of students at Yale Law School, a sixth of the 1L class of Yale Law School, took action to disrupt the Paul Weiss reception there. A week later, students at NYU took action to disrupt the reception there. The week after that, students at Michigan disrupted the Paul Weiss reception there. I just got a call from a student at University of Texas who says, hey, I heard about this. We want to get involved. And that's how it spread. It's just someone sees it and says, there's a bunch of people at our campus who want to do this too. So, you know, we're taking this battle across every front. And I think what it shows, that the capacity of that to spread so quickly without any resources, without any staff, you know, this is just a bunch of students who don't have much free time outside of their 1L study duties, is that we, you know, we're seeing a generational sea change. The next generation of lawyers is not content with this myth that working for massive corporations in ways that hurt real people is somehow morally neutral and okay. And specifically, we're not okay with, you know, our chosen profession having such a prominent role in subsidizing and facilitating the destruction of our planet and our future. And I think, you know, once a generation starts changing, that's a really good sign for, you know, the bigger shifts in the industry and the profession.
Right. And so I guess, do you guys view, and you sort of alluded to this earlier with talking about the history of protest and law school organizing, but do you view this as sort of like a natural relationship for law students to be protesting firms like this? Or do you think that it's something that people are approaching with more backlash? Or would you like it to go in a direction where we really can leverage like the power of a very activist-minded generation to change what are the norms in the career at large?
I think this is consistent with our generation. I don't think it's consistent with law school culture and specifically how people perceive law school culture to be. And that was the tone of the editorial in The Crimson. Like, wait, aren't you law students? Don't you believe that everyone deserves representation? And I think for that reason, because it's not consistent with how people think we should behave, it's actually far more powerful. Mm. And I think what's interesting to me, having kind of sort of just taken professional conduct, you learn that actually lawyers have a lot more freedom and agency in who they represent. So first, I do at some point in this podcast want to address this myth of like to represent or not to represent. That is the question. First, Paul Weiss, or excuse me, ExxonMobil is represented. They have in-house counsel. So to recall upon what Aaron said, this isn't just a question of Exxon getting lawyers. It's them getting the best lawyers with the most money. So that's one. Second, I think it's important that people start to recognize that lawyers, and especially when we're in law school and we're thinking about what does it mean to be an ethical lawyer, we have, I wrote this down because I didn't want to get it wrong, Rule 1.16b4, right? Rules of professional conduct. Lawyers can withdraw if the client insists upon taking action that the lawyer considers repugnant or with which the lawyer has a fundamental disagreement. We have that responsibility and that power. And I know for me personally, I find what Paul Weiss is doing repugnant. And so I am preemptively withdrawing from that representation. But I think that principle is so important to remember, especially as people looking from the outside in think about, you know, should lawyers be doing this? And should we demand that lawyers do this because they have some sort of arbitrary obligation to represent whomever? I think the other piece is we need to separate out what people are talking about in terms of, you know, oh, but you represent murderers and drug dealers. This was a comment that the reputation consultant made, like, oh, you're fine representing drug dealers and murderers. One, I really enjoy that he related ExxonMobil to drug dealers and murderers. I thought that was fun. But again, we're talking about corporate interest law. We are talking about a business that is fundamentally antithetical to a livable future. And so we need to separate out who we're talking about representing, what are the consequences of that representation, and how are you doing it? Are you doing it in a way that is blatantly obstructionist, that is targeting lawyers for doing good work just because they interfere with your end game? So there was a lot of information, but the punchline being this is contrary to how people think of lawyers, and that's a good thing because I think we're getting back at the root of what it means to be ethical and what does it mean to question that for yourself and live into that ethic that we're really required to think about and take on starting as soon as we're barred.
I think that was so beautifully articulated. And yeah, for me, you know, these are conversations that I wish, you know, it didn't fall on us as students to be forcing our institution to have. but they are because it's not currently happening. I took a intro to trial advocacy over January, and I'll call it out by name. We had one day about ethics, and we had a bunch of different scenarios to talk about what's right, what's not. And all of the scenarios were criminal defense situations. And many of them felt like sort of public defender situations. And, you know, I was so deeply offended that when we're talking about ethics anywhere, but particularly at Harvard Law School, where the truth is most people are not going to be going into criminal defense. They're going to be going into corporate interest law. Is that what we're saying where right and wrong is? And we don't have any scenarios of, okay, the corporation wants you to file a slap lawsuit to force some indigenous community in Ecuador to stop their lawsuit after you poisoned their community.
Real case. We're not just making this up.
et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the fact is our education system is not preparing lawyers to be ethical, to engage with these issues in ways that understand the real world. And I'm so glad you brought that up. And the one other thing that I'm glad you mentioned the biggest thing we hear in opposition to this kind of organizing, that idea of, well, everyone deserves a lawyer. Mm. And it's not only that obviously Exxon, you know, has a millions and millions and millions of dollar in-house legal department. It's the fact that that argument is only ever brought up to defend wealth and power and privilege. It is never brought up in the context of Harvard Law School to talk about the 80% of low-income Americans having 80% of their civil legal needs met. It's not to talk about the fact that, you know, at this institution, it's preparing the vast, vast majority of us to go into jobs where we're going to be representing the top 1 or 0.001% and not representing the vast, vast majority of folks. It is true that everyone deserves a lawyer, and the reality is it is not ExxonMobil that is not getting the lawyers right now. It is, you know, the working class people of this country that we're organizing, for and alongside.
Very well said. And for listeners who aren't familiar with this fact, who are non-lawyers, people in the civil legal system, the non-criminal legal system, do not have a right to an attorney. And so there are unique challenges and kind of endemic funding problems with trying to provide adequate representation for people in housing court, in family law. So very, very well said. And again, going back to your point, Hannah, really wonderfully said about the unique ethical obligations that we are required and told that we should be thinking about in law school, but that, in my personal opinion, Harvard Law School doesn't actively cultivate in the way that they should when they consider that they are educating several thousands of lawyers in a given year who then have to go out and perform those ethical obligations in a profession that is purported to require that ethicism to be part of one central practice. So I really appreciate you guys bringing those really important topics up. Sort of wrapping things up, is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know, whether they're members of the legal profession, students, or otherwise, about the action, about your guys' goals, any other last points you want to hit?
Go online to bit.ly/dropExxonPledge. Exxon has two X's in it. And there you can learn more, and we'd also love for you to sign our pledge. And that goes for 2Ls and 3Ls who might already have job commitments. We really are just looking for vast support on this. So if you are able to sign, please, please do so. bit.ly/dropExxonPledge.
Yeah, hundreds of law students at top schools across the country have signed this pledge saying that we will not interview or work with Paul Weiss until they drop Exxon. And I think it's a really great way to show the firm the breadth of support for them to change course. So it would be great if anyone listening who's interested can, again, go to bit.ly/dropExxonPledge.
We just want to say thank you to CRCL for highlighting this. I think it's really exciting for people to be able to participate in this. And our hope is by sharing it, we can get more feedback, but also hopefully recruit a few more folks. So just really thank you for having us.
Thank you both so much, Aaron and Hannah, for coming on the show. And hopefully in a year or so, Hannah, you won't be here anymore doing something better. But I can get you back on and we can talk about all the exciting stuff that's happened with the movement in the last year. So thanks so much for listening. This, again, is Taking Liberties, the Civil Rights, Civil Liberties Journal podcast.